the religion of sex, the state of the church in Western society, defying the devil in international mission work. These are some of the issues addressed in our book of the month for February, The Gates of Hell, Confessing Christ in a Hostile World. It's edited by regular guest Dr. Scott Murray. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. book of the month, The Gates of Hell.
You've looked to me to be your leader, to guide you on this journey. But I'm no leader. I'm a follower, just like you. God has instructed me to stay here and wait for his sign. This is our time to prove through suffering that we are worthy of the miracle that's to come.
That's a trailer for a Paramount Network TV series titled Waco about David Koresh and the Branch Davidians. The name Waco today conjures images of Chip and Joanna Gaines and Fixer Upper and HGTV. 25 years ago, the word Waco conjured a very different image, an image of law enforcement gone bad, of what was being called a cult leader, David Koresh and his people there, allegations of child abuse, and eventually many people perishing in a fire. It was considered, I think, during the Clinton administration, one of the biggest mistakes of his administration, among the many that may be attributed to him. We're going to be talking about this network TV series, Waco. Terry Mattingly joins us, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
I want to go back to young or younger Terry Mattingly. As a journalist at the time, when this story was unfolding, and it did unfold rather quickly, but there was a standoff period, how did you think the press covered it? What was your evaluation at the time?
Well, the main thing I was, just initially, was mad. And the reason I was mad was because as you watch the coverage night after night, and I did, of course, this is in the early 90s at this point. I have been teaching in a seminary for a couple of years, and now I'm, you know, teaching journalism at a Christian college in the mountains of Tennessee. I watched this, and I knew that the people who were leading the coverage just didn't get it. Surprise, surprise. But they didn't get it in a way that was going to be really deadly. I mean, every night I watched mainstream news coverage call on the people that they considered to be the religious intellectual authorities who would know information relevant to what was unfolding 10 miles outside of Waco on the 77-acre Branch Davidian compound. And they're interviewing people from Harvard Divinity School and other really elite academic institutions. And what was making me furious is that as someone who did 2 degrees at Baylor University in Waco, I knew that Baylor had several decades of contacts with the Davidians. And the Davidians that then evolved into the Branch Davidians. Now, I was in Waco in the mid to late 70s, and it was in the late 70s that I actually was a part of a class that had an interesting contact with the Branch Davidians. And I knew that Baylor had these contacts. Now, this is before the young man who would soon change his name to David Koresh. It's about 5 or 6 years before he pulls into town. But the Davidians had been out there since the 1930s, and they were evolving into what became known as the Branch Davidians. When I was doing my church-state studies at Baylor, I took a class on contemporary movements in American religious life. And in one of our classes, a leader in the Branch Davidian group came in and spoke to our class, and I got to meet him and talk to him. And this man was Perry Jones, the father of, at that point, a young girl who would become, as a young woman, the first wife of David Koresh. And in this Paramount miniseries, it was haunting to watch Perry Jones gunned down in the opening, you know, in the first episodes of this miniseries. I remember distinctly, because the class that day was a debate over what the word cult means and what it doesn't mean. And Perry Jones is very candid about their beliefs and how they had left Seventh-day Adventism, but still shared a lot of its emphasis on end-of-times prophecies. But he also mentioned that they were completely pacifists. And he believed that it was accurate to call them a sect, S-E-C-T, but he did not think it was accurate to call them a cult. And I just remember sitting there and thinking, this is all very interesting. And obviously, when the gunfire broke out at Mount Carmel, and this all turned into one of the biggest stories in the world, I couldn't help but think back to that day. And simply stated, journalists were not talking to people who had any understanding of what the Branch Davidians actually believed, and thus they had no ability to negotiate with them in a way that might have led to a peaceful conclusion to this horrible standoff, which led me to think, and I know this is getting complicated, but life is like that, that led me to think that means the FBI and the federal officials who were on the scene, they didn't get it. And perhaps they didn't want to get it in terms of the religious details of what these people believed and why they were there, why some of them believed everything that Koresh said, others didn't. There were debates within the community about some of Koresh's teachings. I just had this sense federal officials are not listening to these people. And I could tell that wasn't happening because night after night after night, I wasn't seeing, frankly, Baylor people being consulted or others in the Waco community who knew the Branch Davidians as rather strange human beings, but as human beings. I mean, people who took care of them at local hospitals, you know, who dealt with them on a host of other issues. So it was bizarre watching this miniseries. And then I had a chance to talk to the two men who did all of the research behind it. And that was fascinating, too.
You mentioned this just a moment ago, but I want you to just talk a little bit about it. You talk about the cult lens. We've got a few minutes here before the break. What is that, and why did that eventually become kind of not just a lens, but a set of blinders?
Well, it literally became a rifle scope. Not just a lens. The men who wrote this, and I'm not quite sure how they pronounce the last name, but it's D-O-W-D-L-E, Dowdle, I assume, John Eric Dowdle and his brother Drew, they said the whole point of this series was to try to show this event through the eyes of the people inside the compound and through the eyes of the federal officials, because they were dealing with a book written by one of the survivors and another book by one of the more sympathetic negotiators. But here's the fact of this. When anytime you're dealing with an event that was this deep in law official procedures, and then you have congressional hearings that go on and on and on about this event, as you would imagine, there are entire libraries of transcripts of the telephone communications between law officials and Koresh and other members of the community inside. All that stuff is in transcripts. And at the same time, then you have the Baylor archives. And one of the brothers, I can't remember which one, it said that there for a while every day when he would go jogging, listening to David Koresh teaching Bible classes and just try to get the rhythm of his voice and how he actually talked and the kinds of images that he actually drew from Scripture. Because Koresh is an interesting guy. I mean, severely abused and bullied as a child, severe learning disabilities. Yet somewhere early in his life, he's 22 when he arrives in Waco, somewhere early in his life, he discovers that he has a savant level of memory power when it comes to Scripture. And while his views of the book of Revelation are quite unique or even bizarre at times, when you hear him make the case, he's connecting all these themes and images and scriptures in a way that actually intrigued some people, even those who disagreed with him, but that there were others who agreed with him some. And all of that is in tapes and transcripts, and the people who wrote this miniseries had all that material to draw on, and they literally know what his words were, you know, in a lot of the crucial moments of the standoff.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about a network TV series, Waco, telling the story of the Branch Davidian complex and the FBI standoff there that ended tragically 25 years ago. He's senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. We'll pick up the story right after this.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Did you make a New Year's resolution to get in shape this year? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness at Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness can help you keep your New Year's resolution. Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. PerformanceFitness618.com.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. EdGruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at AdCruesome.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Terry Mattingly about a network TV miniseries called Waco about the Branch Davidian disaster 25 years ago. A little bit later, Pastor Jonathan Lang is going to join us. We're going to talk about the maternal bond, which isn't only emotional and psychological. He's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Four Ways Moms and Their Children Remain Physically Bonded for Life. Then Scott Klusendorf of Life Training Institute will be our guest. Talk about a recent USA Today opinion column titled Government Had No Role in My Late-Term Abortion Struggle. Let's keep it that way. Terry, I want you to pick up where you left off. We were talking about that cult lens that, as you say, eventually became a rifle scope. Where would you go next?
Well, I have to go back in my memories to the actual contents of that class that day in my church state program at Baylor. Ever since then, I have dealt with the fact, as a reporter, that there are two different ways of defining the word cult. One is doctrinal, and the other is sociological. And in that class that day, we talked about that. When you deal with a doctrinal cult, you normally are dealing with a religious group who changes some core or central doctrine of an established faith. Now, you know, this is all kind of relative. I mean, obviously, from a Jewish perspective, you could make a case that Christianity would be a cult that changed the meaning, the definition of God into a Trinitarian God, you know, and that Jesus was a leader who introduced new revelation to the content of Scripture. Now, you probably are familiar with years of debate, some of which I believe Missouri Synod Lutherans have been involved in, about the status of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You'll see huge arguments about whether or not the Mormons can accurately be called a cult. Well, some people know enough about the history of Mormonism and its doctrine of God and its evolving doctrine of God to know that, yes, I mean, Southern Baptists, for example, still use the term cult to describe Mormons, but they always stress that they're only talking in a doctrinal sense. The reason is that the sociological definition, which gets thrown around as well, has other things in there, like, do you have a living prophet who claims to speak for God? Does that prophet have control, active control over the lives of his or her followers? Does this lead to some social and cultural practices that would be considered bizarre in the context in which they live? Well, the minute you do that, you've raised the stakes way up. You could tell that it's a completely different definition of the word cult. A lot of journalists who cover this just blur these things together completely in a way that, you know, that, you know, can leave you thinking that Southern Baptists are accusing Mormons of being dangerous people on par with someone holed up in a jungle in South America making Kool-Aid. And at that point, the words just become meaningless. Now, the problem from the viewpoint of that class that day and from the problem of Perry Jones, who would later die in the Waco shootout that opened the 51-day siege, is that what happens when government officials have these things blurred? What happens when they think that they know exactly what's happening inside that compound? And yes, let's be clear. Koresh was guilty of some very bizarre things, including his new light revelation that all the men in the community were to be celibate, but that he would take on the burden of sex with their wives, you know, in order for there to be children in the compound. Now, there were people inside that compound who'd agreed with that, and there were people in there who didn't, and some left over that. In the end, all of those kinds of debates inside the Branch Davidians just get wiped away when all of a sudden on these radio contacts with the federal officials, they keep hearing things, or on the evening news, they hear that federal officials, no matter what happens, are going to take their children away from them. And then you get into the details of their prophecies, all of which hinge on the seven seals in the book of Revelation and Koresh's claim that they were literally living through the fifth seal when their community would be invaded by evil outsiders who would try to take away their faith and their children, and that they were to wait where they were and await an act of God that would liberate them. Well, this is, in the words of the guys that wrote the miniseries, the FBI called this Bible babble and had no interest in talking about this kind of stuff at all. If you had had someone in the negotiations who understood some of the extreme forms of Bible interpretation and prophetic sects and sects, of course, and movements that have existed through the centuries and how they have struggled to interpret similar passages, they might have understood what Koresh and his followers were saying and been able to convince them. But if we don't invade you, if we don't validate this prophecy you think you're living out, can we negotiate a way to get the children out? Can we negotiate a way to keep your families intact? Can we negotiate a way where if you're arrested for whatever, you can give your children to other members of your family instead of having them taken custody by the state of Texas, which is exactly what these parents feared? And all of this is in the miniseries. It's very complex and fascinating stuff. And frankly, I think a lot of viewers are going to find themselves sympathetic, not so much to Koresh as much as to the other people inside that compound who are trying to figure out what they believe and why.
The numbers, Terry, are, even though, I mean, it is a distant memory for many people, the images kind of in the dawning age of 24-hour news cycle, those kinds of things that were happening there, the images are kind of burned into your memory, but it was 51 days that this went on.
The siege was 51 days from the two-hour firefight between agents, you know, invading agents from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And then after that, because this was all about the Davidians having guns, and then when it turns out that in terms of they were selling guns to raise money at gun shows and a bunch of other stuff, later investigations found that if you averaged it out over the entire mass of people who were living in that compound, they had a lower ratio of guns per person than is normal in the state of Texas. but that's another issue. But yeah, they had guns, and yes, they were paranoid. But then you get into the two crucial points. One is in the firefight, who fired first? Well, there was supposed to be a video that would show that, and it disappeared or was destroyed. Then you get into the issue of who set the fire. I think a lot of people have forgotten they didn't have electricity in there, and they didn't have running water. The entire place was lit with kerosene, and there were kerosene lamps and kerosene containers in almost every room in the compound because it was their only means of light during the standoff. And so when militarized tanks crashed in the wall, some people insisted that the Davidians committed suicide and set the fires. The surviving Davidians denied this completely and said, no, the tanks crashed through the walls. They knocked over large containers of kerosene, and we had lamps on in almost every room of the place. It's haunting. And then, of course, you have the death totals. They had managed to get some children and other people out through negotiations, but in the end, 76 men, women, and children died in those flames. It's all just unforgettable stuff.
Now, laying aside any suspicions that anyone may have about how, say, the FBI and the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Bureau are going to their history of this thing.
Right.
The part of the job of a journalist is to kind of write the official postmortem, in this case, a literal postmortem. They have to tell the story of what happened. And how did that story end up kind of being written in the American media?
Well, there are a lot of things that we still don't know, even with all the evidence and all the transcripts. The congressional hearings went on and on and on. And the guys that wrote this, the brothers that wrote it, they want to stress they opened this series not with Waco, but with Ruby Ridge, a standoff up in the Northwest in which some kind of white nationalists were holed up, and then there was a shootout. A man's wife died. And the Branch Davidians were watching all of that on TV while aware that they were being investigated, that there were probably informants and people spying on them. The Branch Davidians knew all of that. And from the guy, from the viewpoint of the guys that wrote this, the Dowdles said, told me that they see a direct connection in terms of distrust of the federal government among some extreme alternative groups in American life. They see a direct connection from Ruby Ridge to Waco, from Waco to Oklahoma City, and from Oklahoma City on to thousands and thousands of militias, people in militias, and even to the more extreme forms of the alt-right today. So they believe they're telling a story that has a lot of currency to our day and age right now. And the view of the Branch Davidians, I think, has evolved as more information has come out, and frankly, as more people have heard the voices of people inside the compound.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He is founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back from the break, we're going to be spending some time with Pastor Jonathan Lang. He has recently written a column for The Federalist titled Four Ways Moms and Their Children Remain Physically Bonded for Life. We'll be talking about the maternal bond. Then Scott Klusendorf will join us from Life Training Institute to respond to a recent USA Today opinion column titled The Government Had No Role in My Late-Term Abortion Struggle. Let's keep it that way. Here's what you'll find in the latest Issues Etc. journal. I've written a column titled A Letter to Ex-Evangelicals. Pastor Rob Kieslowski has detailed his journey to the Lutheran Christian tradition, and Dr. Ken Sherb writes about the story of an entire city's journey to the Reformation, Strasbourg, France. We'll send you the Issues Etc. journal for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Solid, serious, substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We have a special offer for first-time donors to Issues Etc. For any size gift during the months of January and February, we'll send you an autographed copy of Pastor Will Wheaton's new book, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety. Make your first-time contribution online at issuesetc.org or send your check to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234, and we'll send you an autographed copy of Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.